For Making Waves, I'm Tom Jackson. In the upcoming week, Congress will be voting on the Central American Free Trade Agreement, or CAFTA. And this free trade agreement has a very direct effect on states. As with most international free trade agreements, there is a chapter in it on government procurement, or purchasing of goods and services. And in that chapter, each state is asked if they want to bind their procurement rules to CAFTA. Initially, former Governor Benson said yes. But now it seems that current New Hampshire Governor Lynch is leaning in the other direction. And I had heard that he was against it. However, when I contacted his office to try to get an interview, which was ultimately declined, they indicated that actually he just has some questions about CAFTA and is not necessarily completely against it. I then took my questions to the person in New Hampshire who knows more than anyone else I can think of about free trade agreements, and that's Arnie Alpert, the director of New Hampshire's chapter of the American Friends Service Committee.
I think that obviously Governor Lynch and his staff need to speak for him. My impression is that they don't consider the CAFTA to be a New Hampshire issue, other than the fact that Lynch's predecessor, Craig Benson, signed New Hampshire up, in effect, as a participant in the government procurement chapter of CAFTA. And Lynch studied the issue and said, no, we're not interested in binding our own state's procurement or purchasing policies to these trade rules. Take New Hampshire off the list. So that's the, and I think that's the extent of what they wanted to do with regard to CAFTA.
But is CAFTA a New Hampshire issue, or an issue for individual states in general? I mean, it seems to me that it's going to affect people's jobs in a number of states.
Right. Now, obviously, CAFTA is a New Hampshire issue. One thing is that the last I heard, the U.S. Trade Representative had actually not complied with the governor's request, and that CAFTA, which is going forward for a vote in Congress probably in about 2 weeks, still has New Hampshire listed on, you know, Annex 9 in the list of states that say that they are going to comply with CAFTA's procurement rules. So that's one part. An element of this which escapes most of the mainstream media discussion about trade agreements, whether it's CAFTA or NAFTA or WTO rules or anything, is that this is not just about reducing tariffs for trade in agricultural and manufactured commodities. What these trade agreements represent is a radical rewriting of all of the rules of global or international commerce. And because so much of our commerce is now international, what it really means is it's a rewriting of the rules of how our economy functions. And the way they're written is a way in which the authority of local government and state government is stripped away and subsumed under these obscure trade rules.
Let's step back just for a second, and for people who don't necessarily know what CAFTA is, or maybe there's, I'm sure there's some confusion sometimes with CAFTA and NAFTA and everything else out there. Give us a basic description of what CAFTA is all about.
Okay. CAFTA is a trade agreement between the United States, the Dominican Republic, and the five countries of Central America. That's Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Costa Rica. What it's intended to do, say its backers, is to increase trade or increase commercial activity between these seven countries, which would, they say, lead to a promotion of economic growth, and thereby rising tide would raise all boats. Critics of CAFTA maintain that it will make it more likely that manufacturing jobs and even service sector jobs will leave the United States and go to these countries where wages are very low and unions tend to be weak or non-existent, that it will enable the markets of the Central American countries to be flooded with subsidized agro-industrial products from the United States, which will drive small farmers out of business. Likewise, small farmers in the United States will face increasing competition, possibly from products agricultural products grown in Central America and the Dominican Republic, such as sugar. The Central American countries will be forced to honor basically U.S. standards on trademarks and copyrights, which will make it harder for them to license generic medicines or to protect traditional seeds from genetically modified seeds produced by companies like Monsanto. We could go on and on. Under the procurement rules, communities may be forced to privatize their water or other basic services. And under the services rules of CAFTA, regulations and policies set by governments at all levels could be challenged as being unfairly burdensome to the companies that are engaging in international commerce. And one more thing, under CAFTA's investment rules, which are modeled on those of NAFTA, any government policy which harms or inhibits or inheres the profitability of a foreign investor from any of the CAFTA countries can be challenged as an unfair trade practice, and that company or that investor could be entitled to win direct monetary compensation. This is a lot of stuff. And that's part of the problem with this, is that CAFTA itself is some 3,500 pages long. It's densely worded tariff schedules. It's legalese that is only decipherable to trade lawyers. It is unlikely that very many members of Congress have spent much time actually reading and trying to understand the text of this agreement. Yet its implications are profound, and there is a lot at stake.
And some of the basic tenets of the whole thing that you just mentioned sound awfully familiar. You know, outside of Central America, for example, many of those same things are being imposed on Iraq today.
It's a model of what the Bush administration or some might call free trade, but really it's a restructuring of commercial activities to benefit investors and corporations that are engaged in international commerce. And doing that by taking away the ability of governments to determine what is in the best interest of the people that they're representing. It's also very similar to NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement between the United States, Canada, and Mexico, which went into effect in 1994, and we could talk more about the impact of that. It's very similar and has a lot in common with the rules of the World Trade Organization. It is for countries that are poor, like the countries of Central America, the same sets of principles are also enforced by the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, trying to drive these countries in the same direction of a very narrow range of policy options that are available to them to determine what they can do in the best interest of their citizens.
Have these types of agreements, so-called free trade agreements, taken jobs away from the people of New Hampshire?
We have lost a lot of manufacturing sector jobs and some service sector jobs in New Hampshire because companies find it beneficial to site their manufacturing or their operations in countries where wages are very low, where benefits are very low, where environmental restrictions are weak, where taxes are low, where they may get more government subsidies. And that might be China, it might be Mexico, it might be Central America. What these trade agreements do, the trade agreements don't create the conditions by which that happens, but they protect the conditions and they make those conditions pretty much permanent. So what that does is it builds in, it takes away the ability of the state of New Hampshire or our communities or of the United States government to try to bring those jobs back to the United States. But if you look all over the state, you can find companies that have gone out of business or are losing jobs, whether we're talking GE and Somersworth, whether we're talking Anna Lee Dolls, whether we're talking, I don't have the list in my head right now, but it's a long list of New Hampshire companies. We've lost a huge number of manufacturing jobs in recent years. One of the things that's important, I've also had the opportunity to spend time in Guatemala and Honduras, Costa Rica and Nicaragua in recent years, and I do have to say that people there are mostly poor, they're unemployed or underemployed, they actually would welcome good jobs coming into their countries. The problem with this agreement is it's not like a matter of we lose but they gain, and maybe in the end we end up better off overall. We actually end up with, it's sort of a lose-lose situation from the perspective of working people and small farmers and folks who care about the environment or consumer protection rules. People in Nicaragua, people in El Salvador say, yes, they want jobs, but they want jobs with dignity. They want jobs with rights. They want to be able to speak up about problems in their workplace without fear that they're going to get fired or kidnapped. They want the right to be able to form unions, just like people in our communities want that right for ourselves. Those rights are not enhanced by this agreement. In fact, they're undermined by these agreements by just making it easier for the companies to pick up at a moment's notice, close the factory, and move somewhere else where people are either more desperate for jobs or where they just simply think that the government is going to look out for their interests more closely.
And if I'm not mistaken, there are cases where people in sweatshops in Central America and elsewhere have tried to organize and the companies have just shut the places down. Is that right?
Well, we've certainly seen that here. We know that if workers try to organize now in a manufacturing plant, they're really going to expect the management to say, if you try to form a union here, we're going to close shop and move to Mexico or move to China or move to El Salvador. Well, the same thing is happening now in Mexico. Since NAFTA went into effect, companies are threatening, if you don't calm down, we're going to move to Honduras or Nicaragua or somewhere else in Mexico, or move to China, which is actually where most of them are going. Same thing is happening. What it does is it enables the employers to play off the workers against each other so that people, you know, the way the workers end up competing with each other is by agreeing to work for less and less money. This is what we call the recipe for the race to the bottom. CAFTA continues the race to the bottom for workers, for farmers, and for communities. And that's part of what's the problem with this whole so-called free trade model.
Well, as the director of New Hampshire's American Friends Service Committee, is there a sort of program that's that you're following that's designed to educate people about CAFTA? Or?
Well, we work with groups like the New Hampshire Fair Trade Campaign, with the New Hampshire AFL-CIO. I had an email from somebody from one of the environmental groups the other day to try to make sure that people have information about this so that they can contact their members of Congress. In our case, it's Charlie Bass and Jeb Bradley. We're also working right now to help people in some other states mobilize folks to contact members of Congress who are believed to be undecided about these agreements. It's going down to the wire in Congress right now. Some of the other trade agreements like NAFTA have been passed by very small margins. The bill that gave President Bush what they call fast-track negotiating authority was passed by one vote in what many felt was a very manipulative and unfair process in the House of Representatives. That's kind of the thing we're expecting to happen right now.
So you'd recommend that concerned citizens who want to try to do something about this should call their congresspeople before the last week in July. Is that a good idea?
We're expecting right now the vote may come up during the last week of July, so we think that people from New Hampshire should contact Congressman Jeb Bradley, who represents the Portsmouth area. People in the western and northern parts of the state should contact Congressman Charlie Bass. The congressman in southern Maine, is it Congressman Allen? And I believe he has come out strongly against CAFTA, in which case he should be commended for that.
Ernie Alpert, director of New Hampshire AFSC, thanks a lot for talking with us.
All right. Thanks, Tom.